some of the guild are waiting here with bated breath to talk to us this evening.
They are. On my left here, I have Mrs. Bagnall, who is the president of the local branch of ICA, and I'll introduce you to her now, Mrs. Bagnall.
Now, what's your first name? We'll be informal.
Maureen. Yeah.
Now, why did you come to do this book? We know it was for a prize, but how did you set about it?
Well, every guild in ICA are encouraged to write a history of their local area, to submit it for adjudication for an arts award. And in February 1989, a group of us got together and we decided we'd
attack this project.
We'd attack it. And over a year, we put it together, and then we submitted it for our arts award, and we got it. Then we had all this information, and we decided, well, it would be a shame not to share it with others.
Hmm.
So we decided to have it published. And that's how our book started.
And it's a very beautiful little book, isn't it?
Well, we think it is.
There's a lovely actual feel to it, and it's well set out and nicely coloured.
Yeah, now, presentation is nice.
It's lovely. Mm. Now, the place Bohna Breena itself, you have an account of that inside here, do you not?
I do,
somewhere inside the first page, there you have it. No, yeah.
The district owes its name to one of the homes of hospitality, which in ancient times were maintained by chieftains for the benefit of travellers. It was the largest of its kind, and Bohna Breena is the phonetic survival of Bohna Breena, the road of the mansion.
Lovely name, isn't it?
It is lovely. It's very musically sounding.
And that was from an article by D.P. Moore in the Evening Press in 61, but you've got even older as well.
We have an extract from The History of Tala by Hancock. Bohna Breena in old times was Bohna Breena, or the road of the court, our great mansion, one of the five great places, our breens, palaces, our breens, houses of universal hospitality, for which Ireland was famed.
And is Bohna Breena still a very hospitable place?
Oh, very much so.
You wouldn't go without a cup of tea if you kind of came along?
Oh, no, we promise you one tonight.
Oh,
all being well.
At the end of all being well, you
all
say.
Being well.
There's a certain veiled threat in that. Do you have many in the guild of the ICA here?
Last year we had 33 members.
That's a good size guild.
Well, it's a very scattered area, and there are guilds, there are a number of adjoining guilds. And in all our projects, we get great help from all our neighbours.
What has this endeavour meant to the guild?
Well, the local people have showered us with congratulations. They have told us that we have put Bohna Breena on the map, and well, their compliments were very complimentary.
And today we're going to the country.
We are, yeah. We're in the country.
This is Donnacha Sunday, coming from the ICA Guild up here in Bohna Breena in Dublin, and I'm still in the same place, looking down towards the lake, and the birds are giving great, great voice to us out there. Now, Francis O'Reilly, you will talk to me about the way of life and the folklore of the place. This took a lot of doing to collect all this material.
Well, in our group, one of the people in our group, Essie Brady, is a local, born and reared here. So we got a lot of it from Essie, and she knew a lot of people. I didn't really know. I'm a real dub in the Irish Countrywomen's Association.
And where do you come from? What part of Dublin?
Well, I live in Tala now at the moment, but I lived in Drimna.
So you would be a blow-in here,
oh, I'm
you?
A blow-in, yes, yeah.
And
you know, I've lived 20 years in Tala, but I'm a blow-in.
As such, you must be careful.
I don't know how I'm accepted.
If we'll move over here and near the car. Let's talk maybe about the schools. You have a nice little piece about the schools.
Well, there was two schools in the areas, a boys and a girls, small schools, and they came from miles around. And they'd no central heating, they just had two big fireplaces. So once a year there was a collection made at the church with turf and the divino spot. But other than that then, the children brought sods of turf or brask and the sticks with them for the fire. And it was really only the infants sat around the fire, you know, the way, but that was the way it was hit.
Shivered as best they could. Now, let's talk about from where children come or where they ought to come from anyway, weddings.
Weddings, well, the weddings, they were usually in the afternoons, and when the bride and groom came out of the church anyway, then they'd go off with the relations and stay off for a couple of hours. And when they got back to the area then, the neighbours would have prepared the feast and it would go on all night, you know, all that evening and all night.
Not too many honeymoons in those days,
No, there wasn't. No, they just Didn't really go on honeymoon, I don't think.
Of course they didn't. Yeah. Now, those who weren't invited weren't very pleasant about it, were they?
No, they weren't. If they'd go outside and they'd blow horns and make terrible noises and everything outside, you know, outside the house. You know.
That so, had no effect, of course, on those inside,
no, it didn't.
I suppect. Now, it would go from weddings to wakes, I suppose, the logical progression.
Yeah. Well, the wakes were, everybody. Well, practically everybody died at home in those days, and they just put a table into the centre of the floor, and they'd put the sheets over the rafters sort of as a canopy, and the wake would go on one night, two nights, maybe three nights if they were waiting on relations and that to come, and they played, they'd have music and they played cards, and they, there was games and all played. And
of course, I noticed they say they had snuff, and a plate of snuff was placed at the table with the candles and the holy water. It was a good deal of sneezing went on during the night.
It was, you see, and this all led to merriment and everything else, you know. Like, it wasn't a sorrowful occasion.
So there was crack. And I noticed your talk, by the way, about two of the games that were played in the early 20s.
Yes, well, I don't really, that's just the games I know that were played then. I don't really know how.
What did they call those?
It was the button and how goes oats to the market.
Do you know anything about them? No?
I don't know anything about
you
them.
Obviously,
no,
you weren't around anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Now, the weather lore, of course, up here, it has to be of interest to people near the mountain, how the weather was going to be.
That's right. Well, of course, they didn't have radio or anything to listen to about the weather lore, so they had their own weather lore, what had happened. If the cat turned up back to the fire, they were in for a storm. Or when the curlew roared, it was calling for rain.
And I suppose the wild geese flying by would have told them something too?
That's true. The wild geese, they flew in from the hills. They were flying in front of the storm. And then when the fox barked frequently in October, it predicted a heavy fall of snow. And if the leaves remained on the trees well into October, it was the sure sign of a cold winter.
And what about one that we had in Cork as well? It was all about Christmas, a green Christmas.
Made a fat graveyard.
Charming thought. Now, the characters in the past, you had many of those around here who would be remembered.
There was a lot, yes. Well, some of them that we could recall, Ragged Clark, he wore old clothes, and that's how he got his name. And he went round in the winter to dig stubble or tresh. And there was the Penny Man, and he was so called because he always asked for a penny. And he travelled from the city once a week to buy hens and eggs, and he always gave the children sweets and pennies.
And
quite another
trade that's gone, you had a harness maker, Matt the
Matt the harness maker, and he would go around all the houses, mending all the harnesses, and he always slept in the loft. I think he never slept in the house, always slept in the loft. You know, to stay probably in the area till all the work was done, and then he'd go off.
And another species that's long gone from us, well, recently, you had a local ballad singer.
That's right. He was coming and going for 50 years and always came at Easter and Christmas when all the important things were happening. And he wrote, visited most of the houses, and he wrote out ballads and he sold them.
And would he actually sing inside in the houses?
He did, yes, yeah. And he'd stop about a week, you know, just to get enough money for food. And he always slept in the open as well, in a shed. Never in a house, you know.
How do those times seem to you now, having studied them?
Well, it's hard to believe that it happened really like that. Everything is so built up now, and everybody has everything so easy, that even as regards the houses and all, and no water and no electricity. The electricity came to the area in 1949, so there was no electricity up to that.
I have to bring you back to the book again. Alive-O, is it?
Alive-O, and he used to push his three-wheelbarrow from Terenure to Castlekelly selling herrings.
He would be remembered, of course.
He is, yeah.
And there's Michael Grumley.
Yeah. He was a bachelor, and they all used to tease him, and they used to say, what are you doing there, Mick? And he would say, I am watching the rabbits in their pretty little habits, and they've all got mates but me. And he was always quoting different things.
And there's a place here called Piperstown, isn't there? You mentioned Joe the Granny. Who was he?
He lives in Collins in Piperstown. And he was making his way home with messages during a snowstorm, and he was died in the snowstorm.
So there was a sad story.
There was, yeah.
Tell me, have you any characters of present day? Are they all gone, those kind of people?
Well, we have one in our guild, Essie. She's a very local person. She gives teas to anybody who's passing by. So I'll give you her address and you can pop in any time.
Excellent. And a boiled egg, I suppose?
That's true, yeah.
Essie, with that sort of reference, you're obviously a very distinguished person locally.
Well, my father lived there, but he originally, his own father came from Swords. And my grandfather bought these farms up in Bona Breena for his sons. And there was actually three of the brothers came, one to Piperstown, and one to Mount Pillier, and one to Kinnaird. And that was my father. So...
You were really born and bred in this place?
Oh, I was, yes. Yes, I was indeed.
Did you go to school here?
I've done part of my time in Lennismole School.
You did time? You make it sound like a prison.
Well, when my mother died, I was taken down to Cavan. And I spent approximately 8 years there. And then I came home and went to finish my schooling in Lennismole.
What part of Cavan were you in?
I was in Clute Hill, in County Cavan. In County Cavan.
Did you like it there?
Oh, I loved it. Yes, indeed, I loved it there. I had a very happy time there, and I still go down to see them.
Which was nice to come back.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I love. I'm living in Piperstown now, which I love very much.
And you wouldn't want to leave it, I suppose?
Oh, no, I wouldn't, no.
How important is the ICA Guild to you?
Oh, it's very important. I have learned a lot since I joined the ICA, and of course this little book now has put us on the map, hopefully. And that's that.
And modern life is even with us. Apart from the birds and the sheep, there's an aeroplane passing over.
Yes, and I have a well-known stained glass artist living beside me, Patrick Pye. He's married there with two children. He's next door to me.
So all the characters haven't quite gone?
Oh, no.
Did I see somebody there who was the oldest resident in the parish?
Yes, Rosie McNally. She lived beside us in Kinnaird, next door to us. And she's out in a nursing home now. She's 93 years of age.
And let me say, that is the first swallow I have seen this year on Donnacha Sunday flying over us here in Borna Breena.
And, Rosie is 96 years of age. Not 93, sorry. And we have Carmel McNally. She lives in Castle Kelly. And she goes in for all these breeding of different kinds of fowl. And she has a peacock up there. And
you have a lot of birds around the parish.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Feathered and otherwise.
That's right. Well, this John Gerard Lee, now, he's the brother-in-law of mine. He died in 1982, the big snow. He had to be... airlifted out to Ellen Park. The snow was that bad.
Is he the man who has the poem here?
That's right.
In the book?
That's right.
Do you know that little poem?
Well, I'd read it, but I...
Will you turn the page then maybe and read it for me? It's the other way, I think. See, I've been studying this book for the last 2 days like for an examination. And I have the advantage of all of you. There you are now.
Lennismole. In dear old Ireland is a valley, away up in the Dublin hills. And as for beauty, none can compare with its heather-clad mountain and flowing rills. And in the evening when the work is over, how pleasant it is tis to take a stroll and bathe your eyes on the lovely scenes that surround the valley of Lennismole. There is an air of peace in this humble valley. You will match it wherever you go. I'm certain it can compare. It can compare with Green Killarney or old or to Fair Dunlow. Its people too, they are kind and cheerful. They work with a zeal to achieve their goal. You may sing the praises of far off places. My choice will ever be Lennismole.
Hear, hear. Mention of Lennismole, of course, reminds me of Finiacht and the great sagas of Finn McCool and all the others, and of course, Aisin, Lennismole. Lovely name, isn't it?
Aisin is a lovely name indeed. Legend tells us that Aisin is supposed to have come on the men trying to lift the heavy stone, and he bent forward the men couldn't lift it, and he bent forward on his white horse, and the girt broke, and he fell, and he's supposed to have landed in the valley of Lennismole, which means Lennismole, the Glen of the Thrushes.
And we're told, of course, that he became an old man immediately.
Yes, legend tells us that he was then 300 years old.
And he had left Niamh Kinnor and Tiernanog long behind
Yes, indeed, he had left Tiernanog long behind him before that, yes.
That's not the effect that Bohan Abrina has on people normally, is it, like Glenys Small? They don't become old when they come out here, do they?
Oh, no, I think they get young again.
It's another Tiernanog.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Glenys Small is a beautiful place.
Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely, that Lennep the Trush is a beautiful spot.
Joe Corcoran and myself are driving out. Now, we're coming to a little bridge here, Joe.
That's right. If we walked across that, it would take you up what we know locally as the Scar. It's up, takes us up onto the level plains of land at Plasamuckey. And in one of our fields, there is a hillock called Nuckantidon. It's supposed to be an old burial place years ago.
And there's a high hill, a very high hill behind us. What is that?
This is that would be Seahorn Mountain.
Joe and I are driving out the small road now from the waterworks, and the forest is in full bloom. There's the white thorn, the fairy trees. It's a lovely, still evening. We'll talk briefly, Joe, about an order of brothers who taught out here in Bohan Abrina.
That's right. Yeah, they were up in a place called Anmount. It's on the Glenysmall Road, just about a half a mile up from where I live in Glasamuchy. These brothers originally came from Clondalkin, and as time went on, no brothers ever seemed to have been replaced until the last brother was Brother Cairns. And Brother Cairns got married to a local widow, and their names of all the brothers are inscribed, you'll see it now when we go up to the old cemetery, are inscribed on the main headstone to the right of the gateway as we go into the old cemetery, Dunica.
So it could be said, Joe, that the brothers never left. They married into the community.
They married into the community. And my father remembered when he was a young boy, there was a huge fire at the house. And the brother sent down for his father to come up to give them a hand as they were to put out the fire, as there was no such thing as fire brigades in those days.
We have climbed above now into the low hills above Bohan Abrina in Ballinascorney, and looking across the hillside here at the trees, at the forestry, and it's a very peaceful scene. The sheep are grazing in the green of the fields, and then there's a way up on that hill I can see the firs. And now at this hour of the evening, as we record this Dunica Sunday, there's a mist creeping down. Joe, as we came along, we passed by a cross, which is sort of mystery around
That's
here.
That's right, it is a mystery. It's known locally as the Stone Cross. From any information that we can gain locally, or seem to have in the investigations that the ladies have done, it appears that nobody can give anything about the history of it. But it's there and will be there for years to come. It has been there all my life.
Now, there's a car coming down the mountain road here. Where is that road leading to?
That's leading to a place called Aughfarn. 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 It's a townland just on the borders of County Dublin. If you go about a mile beyond that, you're then into County Wicklow.
Now, Robert Emmett has some connection with this.
That's right. We're standing here now at the gateway, the white gateway leading into Ballinascorney House, or what was Ballinascorney House. Ballinascorney House was unfortunately razed to the ground about 2 years ago, and it had very historic connections. Robert Emmett being one of the people who holed out here in his days when he was coming back from Wicklow and into Dublin City, and it appears that a few days afterwards then he was arrested in Dublin, and everybody knows what happens then after that, you know.
It's extraordinary, in the most peaceful of places.
That's right.
All
yes.
of the violence that happened in
that's
days
right.
gone
all
by.
Of the violence that happened, that's
now,
right.
Now, looking
that's
at your book here at St. Anne's Well, in fact, St. Anne is really Saint Sentence,
that's right. Now, we'll now go up to St. Anne's, Dunica, and on the way up, we'll pass by through townlands such as Glasavillan, Allagour, Ballymore Finn, and eventually up to Castlekelly. We will then turn around and we'll come back down through the townland of Cunard, and when we pass through there, we'll come to the gateway on which there's a small little black cross of, it's an, just an ordinary gate with a black cross on it, and we get over that and I'll bring you down into St. Anne's Cemetery. It has, it's supposed to be the oldest cemetery in Ireland.
Now,
whether that's right or wrong, I don't know.
This well, the people had a great belief in the curative
powers. That's right, there's great curative powers in the well in adjoining St. Anne's Cemetery. We'll show it to you.
Indeed,
when
as
you
they say, a cure for sore eyes.
A cure for sore eyes,
and
yes.
Sick stomachs. And
well,
sore heads, I suppose.
Whatever you say, Donald.
Look at your pioneer pin, you'll never suffer that. Isn't it a fantastic thing that the work of the ICA has spawned all of this information?
It has. There's no doubt about it. It's a marvellous organisation, I must say. And the women deserve great credit for everything they have done. Certainly in my time, I have often thought about such as they did, but nobody, including myself, ever thought of putting it into operation as they have done now.
I don't know if you can hear it there in the background, but I've heard the first cuckoo I've had for many a year facing down to the cemetery here as Joe opens the gate. We've come down across the very grassy, heavily wetted fields this evening after the first rains in a long time, and I'm in St. Anne's Cemetery, one of the oldest cemeteries in Ireland, and as you heard earlier, we actually heard the cuckoo, it's so still, but as we record this, the evening mist is creeping in, and could we but see, we would see Kippur with our mast up there, and down below us is the upper lake, and what's the hill across the way from us there?
The Corrick.
You picked up a dock leaf there, and your little recitation about it.
Dock leaf, in and out. Take the sting of a nettle out.
They're fine dock leaves here, aren't they?
Oh, yes, yes. You find plenty of them around here.
And they're very useful, those dock leaves.
Oh, yes, if you got stung by the nettles, they are.
Well, I was thinking of something else, but never mind. Now, this lady, what's your name again, when you've recovered yourself?
Olive Kennedy.
Olive, you were the guiding force behind this project last year, were you?
Well, I took over from the first arts promoter and I was chairperson of the fundraising committee to fundraise. And we had to raise over £4,000 to have this booklet printed. So the locals rode in and came to a table quiz and local people sponsored us and local firms sponsored
us. You must be delighted with it.
Absolutely.
Ah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, I was looking at some of the lovely, and I hate to call them weeds, you know. They're not weeds. They're lovely wild plants, these little white flowers here. What do you
yes,
call
indeed.
Those?
Well, when I was small, we called them devil's bread, but it's actually cow parsley.
And there's a nice, actually, there's an attractive smell off them sometimes. And the old nettle and the thistle is here.
Yes, indeed. We didn't realise until we started our study, you know, just nettles, how full of iron nettles are.
Catherine, we're inside the gate of the cemetery here, and to our right, that's what looks like an old stone font.
Yeah, just inside the gate is a large stone, a holy water font. It is damaged on one side and would weigh almost 10 tonne. There's a story that some hundred years ago, a rich landowner in the district thought this font would come in handy as a drinking trough for his horses. So he ordered his men to make it to his yard, to take it to his yard. His men objected to meddle with it, but he insisted they move it. When the horses were yoked, they broke their reins and their traces. But the font did not move. The horses were yoked again, and one of them reared and badly injured his stirrup. The landowner still insists, and one of the horses dropped dead.
In desperation, in fact, you really, the desperation, what did he do? We see. Desperation. He took up a sledge and broke the side of the font, saying it would never hold water for anyone else. There it remains this day and will still hold a small amount of water. In fact, you wouldn't want to interfere with that now, would you?
You'd be afraid to go near it, wouldn't you?
It's a very old cemetery, this.
It is, yeah. It's 300 years old.
And the church down there is very ancient.
St. Santon's Church. But it's sometimes called St. Anne's because of St. Anne's graveyard in which it stands.
There's no one, of course, being buried nowadays here.
No, there isn't. The last person to be buried here was 1982. He was Michael Lawler. He lived in Old Court.
And why did he get permission to be buried here?
Because his wife was buried here. They were allowed to open the grave. And then there was another man buried in 1960. He was Thomas Cochran of Glasamuckie. And I think it was just he wanted to be buried among his people.
And that was the last of it. Joe, do you want to come back here? You're making signals there. Unfortunately, I can't reach to you.
It's the headstone of the monks.
Oh, the headstone of the monks is down there. I can see that from here. That's fine. Were some of your ancestors buried in this cemetery here?
Thomas Corcoran that was mentioned was an uncle of mine, and my grandfather was buried here as well, down there at the very end.
And there's a new cemetery, of course,
there's
not
a new
here.
Cemetery down in St. Joseph's, which is just down below the Catholic Church. We'll be going down there now in Borna Breena. And that was opened in 1945. And it was an aunt of mine, Maria Corcoran, who was, I think, the first to be buried in that one.
And indeed, Catherine, there are a few famous people buried down in the new cemetery, they're not.
Well, Ciarán Burke of the Dubliners is buried there in St. Joseph's. Paddy Kennedy, who won 7 All-Ireland medals, and indeed our own Sean Lee, who played for Dublin in 1963. He's also buried there.
We're still here in the cemetery, in between the hills, above the lake. Mm-hmm. You remember seeing horses come into the...
Oh, yes, yeah. When I was a child, I remember seeing the horses, 4 horses with black plumes on their heads, passing up by the house, coming up to this cemetery. And the coffin would be carried down then from the roadside by the local men.
And would they shoulder it around the cemetery?
That's right, around the walls of the cemetery at that time, yeah. But of course, that's years ago now, you know.
My father had the horses with the black plumes. And I remember that night I went down to an aunt in St. Enda's Road, down by Cherryfield, that's now down below Delaney's. And it was such a bad night that the horsemen lost their hats. And they had to go on into the Fannigans without their hats. They were blown up.
And did they keep the horses for many years? I suppose they did. He had that horse-drawn house, had he, for years?
Well, I think... what time did they go out? And I haven't an idea now what year... 1950, I think, they went out in.
But up to then we had them?
Yes, yes.
They were a very spectacular way to go to a funeral, weren't they? The horse and the carriage?
Oh, yes, they were all, you know... there was nothing else that time, only the horse and the carriages. But up here now, when a person had died during snowy weather, they wouldn't be able to bring them to the church. Now they'd have to bury them, because oftentimes it'd be a week before they'd get to bury them with the heavy snows further up on the mountain.
We're climbing up from the cemetery now, and very steep it is, and there's a rabbit hole, I suppose, there on the left. Essie, you were talking about Finn McCool there to me.
Well, it was. Legend said that he threw the stone from C. Fing, and it was supposed to arrive near Cobb's Lodge, and it was a kind of free stone, and they used to all ship off it. It's all gone now.
Finn McCool's stone has been chipped away. C. Fing is one of the hills around here.
Yeah, and I think it's C. Fing, C. Con, and C. Fingon is the three mountains there.
Very steep place to bring your remains, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, I don't know how they did it. But they used to bring it down on, well, what do you call it?
Trestles?
Yes, that's right. And the horses would only get to the top of the lay, and they'd have to bring it down the rest of the way.
But half the distance which we've come now, they'd be way up at the top of the lay.
Oh, yes,
there.
Yes, up at the top, yeah.
Are there any stories about ghosts and spirits around the parish?
Oh, any? Well, there was an old gentleman used to come in and visit me, and he used to tell me there was a ghost supposed to be outside my place in Piperstown, and he used to tell me various stories about ghosts. Now I can't think of them now.
And were people afraid to pass the area?
Well. I'll tell you, they used to be terrified at night time, because when you'd hear ghost stories like this and knowing where they were, you wouldn't go out to pass them.
I was just thinking too, when I was coming down a while ago with Joe, coming down the old pathway there, that really is the semblance of an old medieval road. Obviously it has been used century after century.
Oh, for centuries, yes, of course it has, don't it, yeah. Sure, if stones could talk, or if trees could talk, you have piles of history in that little half mile of a road.
And indeed, the only talk we're getting now at the moment is the sheep gathering themselves and galloping off into the gloom. We've climbed up now this old medieval road, and I'm making my way around a very lovely, soft, gentle-looking cow path. You're from County Down?
Yeah, from Newry, outside Newry, a place called Ballinacraig.
When we were talking there about Finn McCool, you were thinking, of course, of your own country.
Yeah, down in Restrever. Legend has it there's a stone up there, the big stone they call it, and Phil McCool was supposed to have thrown it from the Mourns, and it landed over in Restrever.
That's lovely country up there too, isn't it?
Ah, it's brilliant. It's much like here.
Is it the Silent Valley, isn't it, too far from that?
The Silent Valley isn't. No, it's very nice up round there. It's a lovely drive.
How long have you been living down here?
21 years.
And have you been in the ICA for a fair while?
For about 6 years.
I've come in now to the nice warm house, and it's cold outside, of one of the oldest residents of the locality, Jimmy Lee. Isn't that right, Jimmy?
That's right.
What do you call the townland here?
St. Anne's.
This is where we are.
Yeah.
Now, I was talking to people about ghosts there, but you said there was a song about a ghost.
Well, there was, yes. It was only just a made-up rhyme, you know. It was about the time of the Land League and all, you know. They used to leave the farms and somebody come and take them over. And this fella come to take over the farm here, and they called him a ghost, you know. So there was a rhyme, as I chanced to stroll to Lenneth's mole upon a fine spring's day, I met a curious looking thing upon the king's highway. A long and slender piece of cane he carried in his hand, like Moses in the olden days going to the promised land. I met him in a lonely place just down below Connard. The hair stood up upon me head, I couldn't move a yard. But as soon as I could find me voice unto this thing, I said, are you a man that left his earth and risen from the dead? He turned his eyes to look at me, I thought I would have died. He made some signs with his cane rod, and then to me replied, I am the figure of a man, of whom the Irish boast, and models is he beholding me, the great king with his ghost. I came into this lonely vale, the papist for to dodge, and visit some kind friends of mine that keeps an Irish lodge. It's often there in modest prayer, our voices we all join, and we sing the praise of other days in the Battle of the Boyne. And since you are a papist, you should think it is no harm. If you put your name upon me list, I get you a lovely farm. Says I, coin sword apart from me, I'll die in the true faith. I don't want your money or your land, you damned old reprobate. I think by what I said to him, he must have got a fright. For round the nandle in the road, he vanished from his sight. He said this ghost has gone to rest, no more will he appear. The devil will not let him out, not even once a year. And if he ever lets him out, he'll put on a disguise as the papists might have taken him, as I hear he have sharp eyes. I know there'd be a few papists here if he only had his will. He'd gather his friends around him, and then he'd roast and kill. So if ever into this valley, friends, you happen for to stroll, beware of that old daylight ghost that hangs with Lennox Mower.
Jimmy, you have a fantastic memory. Where did you hear that first?
An old man, he was 90 years of age over there in Castle Kelly, told it to me.
You used to call round to see him?
I used to see him, yes.
Where did you go to school?
Down here in Lennox Mower.
And were there many in school at the time?
Well, from 30 to 60 at times, you know.
And who were teaching down there?
A man by the name of O'Riordan. Lady Miss First, and then O'Riordan.
Were the teachers very tough at the time?
He was a tough Kerry man.
Oh, Kerry man
was fairly tough, yeah.
He didn't spare the rod?
He didn't spare the rod, and we had to bring sticks or turf in the mornings, you know, being again 9 o'clock.
Do you remember at all any of the poems you learned going to school?
Oh, well, it was just poetry, do you know.
Not as nice as the one you had about the ghost, I suppose. Where did you work in your youth?
Well, I worked for the County Council all my lifetime, from 1925 to 1974.
And where would you have worked all round?
All around here, and then all around the whole district, as far as Kenworth at one time, and round Ternure and all around there, and them days was all in the County Council. Corporation, of course, they're taking over now.
What sort of money were you earning when you started off?
Well, we were only getting 33 and tenpence. That was the first money I got.
Mm.
A week.
What is the earliest thing you remember as a boy?
Now that's a hard one.
You're what? You're 83 or 84
yeah,
now,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I remember me going to school when Father Quinn, the first priest that I knew down here, died in Bowen Abreen, and we got the days off, you know.
There's a very old cemetery down below us here.
Yes, St. Anne's, yeah.
Do you remember funerals going down
indeed
there?
Indeed I do, yeah. Republican funerals and severals.
Have you had a nice life around here?
I had, yeah. I enjoyed it well. Used to cycle everywhere or walk. There was not much transport.
Would you walk from here into the middle of the city?
We often had walked to Tenure. That was the nearest on that route. The tram. There was a steam tram in Tallaght.
A Punchestown.
That was a big time here. You'd all be prepared to have everything sewn and all to go to Punchestown.
Or to go to the races.
The races, yes. Generally, be the last 2 days in April or May. And we'd have to walk to Tallaght. Get a steam tram from there to Blessington, walk across the hill to Punchestown.
It was fantastic,
it
wasn't
fantastic,
it?
Fantastic, it was, yeah.
And they have great banks in Punchestown for jumping,
haven't
they?
That's right, that's right.
Are you fond of the horses?
Well, not terrible, but I enjoy them. I'm more or less fond of football all my life, you know.
Oh, are you Gaelic football?
Gaelic, yeah.
And which is your club here?
St. Anne's.
Now, who'd be famous from that club?
Well, there was an nephew of mine was fairly famous, Sean. And then there was Paddy Summers and Paddy Nally and severals like that.
And Joe McNally?
Joe McNally, at present now. He's in the...
A fine ball of a man?
He is, yeah.
Tell us a bit about your nephew.
David Cardle. Well, he died when he was young. He
had played for Dublin, hadn't he?
He had played for Dublin, yeah. He was a good footballer.
And
there was severals.
He got leukemia, did he?
He lived just up here, yeah. Yeah. He got leukemia, yeah, well.
Poor man.
Yeah.
So he died young.
He died when he was young, yeah.
When you were a boy, were there many travelling people on the road?
A lot. Mm. A lot of people. And they used to go around here, walk, and there was what they called a penny man used to come every Tuesday. And then there was a Jew man used to come every Monday, you know, and all these fellas.
And why did you call him the penny man?
Well, he always collected a penny. He asked for a penny.
And people liked
and
him, I
suppose.
And
he got a penny, liked him. And then there was Jack Martin. He came around here. He was a ballad singer. He'd sell ballads and sing songs, and he was very good. People used to look forward to him coming.
And would he come into the house
to sing?
He'd
come into the house, and he'd have his cup of tea and maybe stay all night, you know.
Sing a few ballads.
You see, he wouldn't sleep inside. If he hadn't, he wouldn't sleep in it, and you let him. He'd sleep out. He maintained. He never slept in the house from the time he left school. He left home.
Do you know what was the end of him? You don't, I suppose.
He died suddenly during the snow in 47.
And where did you bury him?
Well, he wasn't buried here, during in County Meath.
Oh, he was from there.
Yeah, yeah.
So finally he rested at home.
He rested at home, his own place, yeah.
Exactly like our story, but today it's been in the hills above Bohan and Brina, courtesy of my good friend and colleague Tom Scollard, and thanks to Tom for all his help, and of course Joe, our guide, and all of the ICA. But there's another story, bigger stories even still to Bohan and Brina. We'll have to go back. Maybe some Sunday night I'll join the McNallys and the parish priest of Harold's Cross for a game of 25 up there near the church from Donnacha. And this Sunday in wild and windy with lovely Bohan and Brina, Slán na Guibh Go Fóill.